ongoing dialogue of the God Journey podcast. Many of us are waking up to God's not a formula to be worked. He's a God who loves us, who has a purpose in the world to redeem it back to himself, who will work good in our lives through the most horrible things that we face.
When we first started this whole podcast thing, you and I were trying to come up with a name. I just remember somehow the whole God Journey thing settled.
And we've had people tell us that was a stupid name.
Those just few words say an awful lot of true things. This is my journey. This is just my deal, my little story. It's not about me. I am just a supporting actor in a greater drama that isn't about me.
We got the Oompa Loop opening.
What are you asking a question for? We already know it. We already heard it.
You're making fun of me because I didn't know which one we're leading with, so that's good.
I don't know either, but now we'll do Oompa Loompa.
Bob's become a big hit on this thing.
Have you noticed? We just put the I put the podcast up at
within
11 o'clock.
Within minutes, he's like a hero.
I think you're going to have to lose your place at the podcast, and I'm going to bring Bob in.
That'd be awesome. I'll sit and listen.
just fly me back from Virginia every
he's
few
weeks. He's still here. Yeah, with a big budget.
To pay
that's
for
awesome.
It.
Can you believe he's still here? What's that voice? Actually, we planned to do one with Bob, but
this is like a standing ovation.
Actually,
he's still here, so we got to do another one.
Well, and actually, we'd already planned to do another one before we got all these things posted, but I'm grateful.
Well, the truth is once we stopped taping the first one, we kept talking, and we sat there going like, you know, you should have just said that on the podcast, and so we're having to do another one.
Yeah, so
that's
we're
exactly
excited.
The way it happened.
Yeah,
too much wisdom, too much brilliance.
Too little time.
Got to be shared.
Too much. Well, yeah, I got to tell you about it. You know the T-shirts we're talking about making?
Yeah.
The Sacred Cow Tipping Team?
Yes.
And we talked about on the back having something like
six
so much...
freaky things about Jesus.
So much beef, so little time. Someone suggested this in Illinois. So much bull, so little time.
Oh, there you go.
I like it.
That's a little edgier. Yeah. I'll go for it.
We're going to sell those T-shirts. We're going to go big time, Bob.
There we
I'll
go.
I'll buy one, bro.
Oh, will you? So much bull, so little time. Oh, he's gonna
the
join
issue
the
is not will you buy one, will you wear one?
That's the question.
Oh, yeah. No,
question.
I'll wear one.
Yeah,
wear
I believe one. You.
Yeah.
I believe you. In the short time that I've known you, I believe that.
But I'm just
my
really...
My initials, you know, are BS.
All pastors should be.
Wow, the cynicism runs deep.
You. I forgive you, brother.
It just was up on a T. I couldn't. Oh. I could not swing.
Oh.
To all out there in potty space, I tell you, it's everybody enjoys it here.
It's hard being here in this office, isn't it? Well, we put that podcast up about 5 hours ago, and it's amazing the number of folks that already have heard it. And I'm blessed by just those who've written the form already and just acknowledged how much they were inspired, Bob, by you. One talked about, I like this comment. It said, Bob's love for God really was like a sweet aroma that stirred that hunger in me. What could be better said about our lives, any of us? Isn't that the way we want to live in the world, man? That somehow the aroma of my life
stimulates the...
No, the chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah, you should have met me before I retired.
That aroma wasn't so good.
I always loved the Lord. I just didn't have time to.
And what's that odor we smell? It was sweat.
Oh, boy.
It wasn't sweet aroma. I'm glad that captured. And Bob and I have continued working on this book, and we're talking about for communion. And the working title right now, we've gone through a number. I don't think this is the final one. The working title now is, What If He Really Showed Up?
Oh,
what if he really showed up?
Oh, boy.
But we started with a story that I just thought would be appropriate for this podcast. So we wanted to talk about what Bob, what we got talking about after we shut the microphones off the other night, was about temptation, particularly sexual, lustful kinds of things. And we've covered that a few times here, and we thought we'd come back to it. But I think the story we've been working on kind of ties the last one about the Lord's table, God at our table, to what we want to talk about tonight. Why don't you just retell that story?
Well, Wayne, Brad hadn't heard this yet, so it's going to be exciting for him. I think it's
already.
You got to be careful with the preacher when he talks about how exciting his stories are going to be.
Yeah,
but just wait till the end of this broadcast.
You've retired and you haven't learned.
No, I haven't learned.
Not to tell people how excited
it's,
they
it's
should
be. It's a great story. It happened
so be
back
excited.
About 30 years ago. I was in my second parish, and it was a large parish, and I was working lots with young people. And
is that what Jesus meant when he said that all shall perish?
I don't know.
Oh, sorry.
Spelled differently, Wade.
This is not going to be near as good if you quit. Stop interrupting me.
We're still in the 522 burn.
All right. Well, here we go. I was in my office, had a staff and had a lovely group of secretaries and their little offices were outside mine, and we I got a call late in the evening, and a young fellow said, I want to come over and talk to you, but I want the secretaries not to be there. I don't want anybody there. So he showed up after hours, and I missed my jog that night because I usually went after work to jog.
Running fool, that boy.
I was a running fool, and Wayne never joined me.
I'm not an idiot.
But anyway, I met him, and he came in, and I could tell by the way he looked he was really serious. And I began to ask him what was wrong, and he just poured out for over an hour about the sordid circumstances that he found himself caught in. Really several months, even maybe a year, over a year of male prostitution.
Oh.
In a local, well, really a premier hotel among the wealthiest people in the city. And I was a young pastor, and I had never heard anything like it. And I didn't know what to say. I didn't have words to say. So I reached for the Word of God, and I picked it up, and I couldn't find anything. And I guess I could have found a place where Jesus worked with prostitutes, but I don't think he ever encountered a male one. And so I didn't know what to do. And I just, I bowed and said one of these little preacher's prayers. And it didn't do any good. He was just weeping, you know. And so I got up, I excused myself, I went outside, and I said, sweetheart, I said, I got a kid that's in real trouble.
Well, you called your wife, that's what you
called. I called my wife, I said, look, I said, Ellen, I got to bring somebody home for supper tonight, and I said, he's really in trouble.
And he's a newlywed. I mean, this is the first time you're springing.
This was like the first month of our marriage.
Uh-huh.
So it was 31 years ago. And and she said, okay. That wasn't the last time I'd do that, but it was the first time, you know, to tell her there's going to be an unexpected guest at dinner. And sure enough, we walked in. And when we walked in, we went out to the parking lot, and he jumped on his motorcycle, a Harley Davidson 300, and followed me home. We pulled up in the parking lot, walked into the door, and as soon as we walked into the door, we looked over at the table, and there was a linen cloth on top. A silver chalice full of wine, a silver plate, and the bread. And he was shocked. I was shocked. And he just walked over the table and sat down.
Ooh.
And, well, I read a word from the Word of God, but I put it into the language that he needed to hear. I started out like this. Steve, this is my body, which is for you. This is my blood, which is poured out for you. For your sins, Steve, and for the sins of all the other sinners in the world, welcome home. Well, it was an encounter. We all sat there, and it was strange because there was another unexpected guest. Maybe my wife expected it, but the Lord showed up.
Wow.
And the Lord, around in the loving fellowship of that table, met that young man and gave him a kind of forgiveness in a tangible way. And that's what communion really ought to be understood as. It's God's mercy coming in a tangible way. Forget about what happens to bread and wine. Jesus is there giving it to us and giving himself with it. Wow. That's a simple way of saying it. And anyway, the boy rose. He was forgiven, and he was determined never to sin that way again. Now, we all know he did sin, but not in that way again. But even if he had, and however he would always come back to that table for forgiveness. Not in our place, but wherever he went. And the table of the Lord would never again to him be just something to be done for the doing of it, but a place where Jesus met him
right, in
mercy to heal him.
Isn't that a great story?
Isn't that a great story?
What's so beautiful about that is the unexpectedness of that table being set
All right.
You didn't have words earlier.
No.
And you didn't need words then.
He didn't. He didn't need something to. He couldn't feel anything from inside himself. There had to be something from outside to come and to say, "This is mercy, and you've got it." You see, and that's just a practical way. People get so worked up over what happens to bread and wine, when what God is really concerned about is what happens to people when they sit down with Him.
Yeah.
I got chills just saying.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, it's just
I love
this. This is the way we've got to reinvent Christianity.
And it happens at the table where we have the common meals of life, not some other locale set apart for some kind of holy event.
Steve, let's just call him that. You know, he would have been comfortable going to the other kind of holy place.
Oh, no.
Because what he did in his perspective, I don't think what he had done was any worse than what any of us have done.
Yep.
Different than we've done. We've all sinned. We've all rejected God in various ways a million times in our lives. But he would not have been comfortable. And you know what? A lot of Christians wouldn't have been comfortable sitting next to him if they knew what he'd been into.
Well, that's true.
Oh, yeah. And, we treat people like they have the plague.
You know, and the neat thing about it is, he was surrounded. My wife and this preacher, that night, we loved that kid. And I believe the sacrament of Jesus Christ, in other words, the way that Christ comes to us, was just as much in our hug of him as in his eating and drinking of the bread and wine.
Oh, yeah.
See, and it's not a different thing. I mean, it wasn't different, really. It's just the same presence, isn't it? And didn't Jesus say, "Where any two or three of you are gathered together in my name, I'll be in between you." And Christ was in between us. And I think probably the fact that we loved him and welcomed him like we did was key to his heeding the welcome of the Lord at that table. So many of us, you know, we put a fence up around the Lord's table and say, "Well, if you're good enough, you know, we'll give you the bread."
But, or repent long enough.
Yeah, or repent long enough. Or prove to us that you're worthy. You know who the people are who shouldn't come to the Eucharist, to the Lord's table? The people who think they're worthy to be there. The way you're worth it is if you know you're loved and you don't deserve it.
Yeah.
You see? Because worth is all about God's estimation of us. It's not whether we can be good enough to deserve grace.
And what a place to be welcomed home. You know, for us to be at table with the Christ we've offended by our own failures and mistakes and errors, and we get to sit at table with him
with
full
him.
Acceptance of his yeah. work for us.
You know, in the Eucharist, we have the sign for the reality in heaven. We get the reality for the sign. I wrote a poem once about it, about my own death. I said, "Depart, my soul, depart in peace. Run swiftly to a higher feast. God's joy for wine, God's light for bread. Feast long my heart at table spread."
I'm hungry.
I am too.
I think our culture, I think people are so hungry for what we're talking about, but they're so disconnected because most families today don't even sit down and have dinner.
They don't.
Other.
No.
That whole idea of being at table where you are welcome, you're celebrated, you're accepted, that is missing.
Yeah.
In so many people's lives in this culture, because you're just going like, they're most of the time kind of doing the fast food thing. They're doing it something on the run. They don't have a place where they're celebrated, and they are. They're absolutely hungry. I think our soul needs to know that acceptance.
Yeah, just to remind what we talked about last time in the podcast, you know, the eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. That we Christians particularly, we run that text down, and we make fun of it like it's, you know, it's talking about going out and boozing it up at a sports bar or pigging out at some barbecue place. When it really means
we did that.
Yeah. When it really
last night.
Yeah, sorry.
What it really means is sit down with your family and have a great meal and enjoy good wine and the fellowship with each other.
And enjoy each other's company.
And just enjoy each other's company. Be merry in the presence of God, in the presence of each other. Think about it. You know, it was written by Jews. Think about the Sabbath meal and the love and the joy and the happiness of a day of rest and the wonder, the best meal of the week. You know,
I still look back with great joy. One of the things from my childhood that always comes back is there are four boys. six of us would be around the table, and what I remember our table experience, they were hilarious. I mean, it was funny. People would tell stories about the day and about what we were going through. I still look back on my childhood and say, gosh, those times around table were the best.
Yeah, for us right now, I mean, I've been doing the little commute thing down to doing this remodel down in Orange County.
Yep.
And the biggest sacrifice and the challenge on the family is the fact that we're not having the fun that we have at the dinner table. And so when I'm home, it is that's our place of laughter. We have the best time sitting down. It doesn't matter what we're eating. It's the fact that we are enjoying each other so richly in that moment that, you know, that's what I recognize. It's like, that's a beautiful place.
It's a great place.
And to be able to cultivate that sort of perspective on the world. My older son, you know, was studying for a test late last night, and he's kind of totally stressed out. And I just look at him, and I'm like, what are you stressed out about? And our whole conversation dialed off the performance of, you know what, I could care less what you get as a grade on this test. What I'm hoping is that you'll discover what learning is all about. And then I talked to him about the whole bit of, you know, I think God's wanting us to enjoy the life he's giving us. And I tell you, that opened up his mind to a whole different world. And it's like in an instant, the stress left. And he just kind of went, Dad, I want to understand that. And so, I mean, just that one comment you made yesterday when it was beautiful in terms of my being able to give it as a gift to him. It's just a whole new perspective going, like, life is about enjoying what's around us and being thankful for what God's entrusted to us.
To enjoy what he gives.
Yeah. And to give thanks all day for it. I think the whole of the Christian life, if we've really been saved by grace, if it finally is that God's so happy I'm in the field, he's going to pay me the same he's been paid, he's paid everybody else. And there's an egalitarian sense in that. If it's really true that it's the worker and not the work, that God just wants me there in the field with him, then we can really live our life not to get brownie points, not against the judgment day, because we already know we've got the God who the God who saves us is going to come down off the throne and judge us. So they're not two gods that we really have, we accept our acceptance, and it's free. Tillich said one time, Paul Tillich, he said, when we get to the end of the Christian life, the end is where we started. We began with grace and we end with grace. What a wonderful way. Now, what does that mean? It means I can live my whole life, like you just said, with laughter and joy and fun and peace. And you know what? I'll work more because I'm doing it out of love. And I'm doing it out of joy and out of thanks. But I don't have to. I get to.
Yeah.
Isn't that where religion's kind of confused enjoyment as sin? Instead of sin is enjoying what God hasn't given us, and righteousness is enjoying what God has given us, what God has brought into our life. And enjoyment, enjoyment's not sin, but you grow up with a certain amount of, if it's fun, there must be something wrong with it, and if it's, really hard and I'm dying to it, then it must be godly. I think I have some of those misplaced constructs, I think, in my past, and I really do think it's the enjoyment of what God gives. And enjoying it, and how do I enjoy this, not just how do I endure to the end?
No.
Yeah.
Well, the whole contentment that Paul talked about, he's found the secret of contentment, whether he's had a lot or a little. And you're just going like, gosh, so many people's lives, you brought up the parable of the workers in the field. Most people, I mean, I've read this all my life. I get ticked off about that because I don't put myself as the guys who come at the last minute. You have this little perception as if, man, I've been working, God, and you're going to give the same, knucklehead who just showed up.
Sure, that's
the same thing as me. And it reveals the fact that we still haven't touched the full measure of what this grace is. Because when that does happen, gosh, the generosity of heart that explodes when you know someone has been touched by that kind of love. They respond in kind, and just going like, wow, Lord, I need that daily.
If you said it's about the worker, not the work, that has to, for Jesus, That's also got to be as true for the workers.
The person, in other words.
Yeah, that's got to be as true for the person. Well, I was here all day, and I should have gotten paid more. I got to be with him all day. I mean, there's the reward.
There's
the
my
reward.
Payment.
Yeah, the reward isn't I get more money.
Right, right.
I've been
right.
with him all day.
Which is precisely what the father said to the other brother. You've been with me all along.
Yeah.
You know,
and
you
missed it.
You know what I love about that part?
Isn't that
isn't he whining about, you know, you didn't kill the cow for me. I have slaves here. You didn't kill the cow for me. And what the father is really saying to him is, it's really worse than you think. Because the brother's kind of ticked off that you killed your good cow for that boy. And what the father says to him, really, it's kind of worse. It was your cow. I killed your cow because everything I have belongs to you. And I just think it's hilarious. Was it my cow? I didn't kill my cow. I killed your cow. You could have killed that cow any day you wanted to. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's a great story.
Father just said, I whacked your cow. So.
Yeah.
Well, we got Dr. Lust here. So
Dr. Lust?
Can I make the – I think I have
We're never going to get to sin.
I have a Sedgway.
A Sedgway.
Yeah, here you go.
It's from Texas. Sedgway. It's a Sedgway. Yeah.
Sedgway.
Sedgway. Yeah, it's a Sedgway. From Texas.
I'm from Texas. I have a friend, a Lutheran pastor in Tulsa, Oklahoma. His name is Dr. Brockoff. And Dr. Brockoff is a great gospel preacher. If anybody ever goes to Tulsa, Oklahoma, go to Redeemer Lutheran Church and hear Bob Brockoff preach. He told me a story once
about... How many
about,
folks you think on this podcast are actually going to do that?
About...
Yeah. That'd be interesting.
Maybe us.
Anyway, he was a preacher of the word, and you could always count on grace being preached when he preached it, when he was in the pulpit. Anyway, there was a young man whose name was Bob, no kin to him, but came to him one day in sexual sin, and confessed it to Bob Brockoff, and Bob Brockoff led him to Christ and baptized him. This young man became a Lutheran, a faithful member of the church, but he had had a practice of sexual immorality over many, many years. He's a handsome kid and had all the women he wanted, and he just couldn't stop. And he kept coming back every week after church. He had a kind of little appointment with Bob Brockoff. He'd say,
fix it.
He'd confess his sin and he'd ask God to forgive him and ask Bob Brockoff forgiven, and Bob would always say, look, you don't have to come to me. You know, you ask God to forgive you. God's love will not change toward you. And he said, you just keep coming back. You know, you've been baptized, and God has given you a statement of forgiveness. And every time you come back to him, you come back to the baptism with which you were baptized with, and God will just give you a piece of the mercy that he's loved you with. Well, he kept coming back again and again and again. And every Sunday, I can't stop. And he kept coming back. And then after several months, he didn't come back one Sunday. He was in church, but he didn't come back. And then and then the next Sunday, he didn't come back. And Bob ran out of the parking lot. And he called him before he got in his car. And he said, Bob, is everything okay? Bob thought he was, you know, that he was just giving up because he stopped coming to the preacher.
Yep, yep.
And Bob, young Bob, said to Bob Brockoff, he says, oh, Pastor, he said, I'm not doing that anymore. He said, I just couldn't continue to sin in the arms of mercy.
Oof.
You see, what finally stops us from immorality or from sin is not the threat of hell.
No.
It's not the hatred for sin.
Mm-mm.
It's not the love of righteousness. It's not even our love for God.
And it certainly isn't the strength of our own effort.
Right.
It's not that either.
What finally breaks the power of sin is the love, the grasp of grace, the grip of grace that will not let us go. That's finally it. I cannot continue to sin.
Why didn't I get
in the arms of mercy? My daughter said, "Was that her name?"
Well, Johanna's got some other issues, but
why
weren't we taught that in Sunday
school?
Why weren't we taught that in Sunday school?
Because they didn't know it.
I guess
the truth is you cannot give this. I mean, what I think everyone was responding to off of the first podcast in the forum is, Bob, honestly, listening to you say words. They're just soaked with a heart that knows the love of God. And that's what will touch the lives of people around us when it's not just words, but it is accompanied with the reality of that's alive in me. It's not just what I hope to be true. It is true. And if we can express the kindness of God, that's what melts the resistance in the human heart. Because I think most of us, who would reject the idea of, you know, do you want to be accepted? Oh, no, I just absolutely couldn't. I don't want. Every human heart is craving to know that they can kind of sit down inside and that they are loved and accepted as they are. You know, the insecurity of having to perform for this is exhausting. And if we can touch each other's lives because that's who's touched us, man, then there's some real hope of transformation.
But how
that's
much,
good,
how,
Brad.
How much have we? We were just at the Reagan Presidential Library today commenting over the Just Say No was a pillow or something. You know?
Yeah, that was Nancy Reagan's
Nancy Reagan's slogan.
Against drugs.
Which
and
has
I
been
admire
most of,
her for that.
I do.
It didn't
but,
work. You don't just say no. You got to hear a yes bigger than all the no's to get you there.
But wouldn't you think 90% of people who dealt, old Bob dealing with young Bob, would be saying, look, buddy, you just got to say no. I mean, that's mostly the rhetoric we hear when you're caught into that kind of temptation. And I think oftentimes we make it even worse. We pull in the Matthew 5 thing, saying, well, it doesn't matter if you're actually having sex with women. It matters that you're lusting in your heart after it. So it's even, again, it's even worse than you think. And, you know, I think we just put such an onus on people, men and women, to, in the face of a temptation they're already struggling with, to say, you know, you can't even think about it.
No.
And it just doesn't work. And so the bondage grows deeper, even as their hearts get more depressed and disillusioned that somehow this Christianity isn't working for me, man, because I'm trying to stop. I'm trying to say no. I'm trying not to think about it. And it's not working.
No.
Well, in the face of that definition, you're already starting from an overwhelming sense of failure. There isn't any hope in that. And so there's a sense of, well, if I'm already, you know, messed up, then I might as well just go ahead if you're saying that they're the same.
My point is we don't have a freedom ethic from grace. Our freedom ethic is from performance and from saying no and from stopping. I had somebody wrote me today that had been asked to teach a college class at the church, and they want to teach about the love of God and how the love of God transforms us. And they kind of submitted what they were going to do. The pastor wanted to see their curriculum kind of thing. And he wrote back to them saying, this is not enough to change people. If we don't give them the fear of God, and they got really confused by it. You know, quoted the Ananias and Sapphira. The reason that happened was so that God could instill fear in the people for the leaders of the church so they would obey him, which is an interesting Acts 5. I've never heard that before.
Hmm.
But I think that's what most people get, particularly in the kinds of conservative groups that I have been a part of in the past. You had an interesting take on that the time, Bob. We were talking about, what is temptation exactly, and what is lust, and what is Jesus getting at? And I thought it was a story of a candy bar or something.
Yeah, I want to just say that there's a text in the Bible that's been so misunderstood. And actually, I have a rabbi friend of mine down in Florida who really has helped me with this because, you know, being college chaplain all those years, 13 years, I had to deal with, you know, sexual immorality.
Left, right, and center.
Left, right, and center. And I must say there wasn't a whole lot, you know, quite like the story of our young Steve, whose name wasn't Steve, but we told him a minute ago. But Jesus did say, if you look upon a woman to lust after her, then you have committed that sin in your heart. You've committed adultery in your heart. That's basically what he says. And I'm sure he means it for women, too, if you look upon a man to lust after him. Well, I asked this rabbi about it. I've always felt like that what I've always been taught about it, that is, if you have a bad thought, it's the same as doing it, like you said. And I've actually had young people come to me and say, well, I've lusted after, I've already done it, so I just went ahead and did it anyway.
Yeah, what's the difference?
What's the difference? I've already, you know, I've thought about it, and I've copulated with her in my mind, so I'll copulate her with her in the backseat of the car.
I want your language.
Well, I didn't use the other word.
But, well, thank you, Bob.
But anyway,
I
talked to this rabbi and he says, you Christians don't understand the way Jesus and all Jews think about sin. He said, the sin is in the deed. not in the thought. Now, the thought begins, it begins the spiral, but it's the thought is never the sin itself. And that sounded a lot real for me, and I thought, now, where have I heard that before? And, of course, that's where it says desire in James, where and James is the most, of all the epistles, James is the most Jewish. James says, desire, when it is conceived, gives birth to sin. Mm-hmm. But do you notice the difference between desire and the actual conception of sin itself? There's a problem in the thoughts, you know, but the thought itself is not the sin. Now, there it is in James.
Also, in Hebrews, where it's talking about the word of God is sharper, and it's alive and active, able to divide between the thoughts and the intents of the heart.
Yeah, that's a real good way to
You know, there's a whole volitional aspect when you just go, like, it's a thought. But when you add intent to it, it's like, wait a minute, my will has joined to the little thought that just ran through my head.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned Hebrews, which is the second most Jewish of all the epistles, right? But anyway, his idea, what he underlined was that for the Jew, the sin is in the act or in the will. It's not just in, it begins in the thought, but it's not there. The thinking of it, in fact, to a Jew, is not sin at all. And I thought to myself, now that makes a lot of sense, because if just thinking about sex, or if just desiring a woman, or if a woman a desiring a man is wrong, if that is
then
sin,
no hope
which
for
is
any
the way
of us.
Well, no, you couldn't grow up. You couldn't grow up. You couldn't. I think about some of my friends, and Wayne and I have good friends that have fallen to terrible sexual sin, who were converted as young men and young women. And what they did was, instead of allowing their sexual nature to develop, they put a cork in it. We have one friend who was saved like 12, 13, you know, and he put a cork in his sexual life. In other words, he couldn't be sexual until he got married. So what did he do? At 14... he put a cork in his sexual life.
He just
well,
denied.
At 14,
that sounds painful.
You don't know whether you're in love with the quarterback or the cheerleader. I mean, your sexual, okay. Your sexual being.
I did.
Yeah,
I gotta tell you,
your sexual nature is, you know, your sexual desires are developing, and you put a cork in it there. And this young man, who is not a homosexual, had an affair with a young man. And Wayne and I both, we know this guy. We know that's, but what happened was there was a whole side of his sexuality, which if he had developed naturally, he could have grown past that. But because he put the cork in it.
What does that mean to develop naturally, though? What are you talking about for a 14-year-old?
Well, I mean just that you have natural desires.
That you celebrate them.
Yeah, and that your sexuality is not something that's ugly. It's not something that's dirty. And your sexuality is a gift of God. Now, I'm going to take it one step further. I'm going to tell a story that some people out there in Podland might
podcast
not understand.
Land.
Podcast.
It's okay. They'll shut them off.
All right.
I like Podland.
Podland.
Whoa.
Anyway, there was a story on Fresh Air the other night. What was her name? Terry Gross. She had a young guy who was a gay rabbi. And this young fellow, he'd never practiced homosexuality, but he really felt proclivity towards, you know, the homosexual lifestyle. Well, anyway, he went to the chief rabbi in Jerusalem. Now we're talking about big time, the Pope of the Jews. Anyway, he walks in, and he pours out his heart, you know, just bless his heart. And the old rabbi, the head rabbi of all of Israeli Judaism. Said to him, yeah, he stopped him, and he said, have you given thanks for it? And he said, thanks for it? he said, your sexuality is a gift from God. He says, before you repent, before you work on the way it's been twisted, give thanks for the gift of your sexuality. What a celebration. In other words, celebrate before you cry. Give thanks before you start beating up on yourself. And let's we'll work on to getting the twist out of it, however that's done or whatever that means. But let's give thanks for it. Let's not hate ourselves for being sexual beings.
That's the thing, the contempt.
The contempt
that comes from the failures and the twists that I think really self-perpetuate. The contempt leads to shame. Well, shame leads to
our
greater...
Our friend who fell into sexual immorality, when he made his public confession, it was all contempt and self-hatred.
You could still hear it, yeah.
You could still hear it. And in the writings that he's done since then...
There's no freedom from it.
There's no celebration of the fact that he's a sexual being. But he put that cork in the champagne bottle, you know. I think that... You know, what Jesus was really telling us was there's a place where thinking about it and desiring it can come over to willing to have it at the expense of another person.
Yeah.
Where desire is conceived and gives birth to sin.
Yeah.
Now, I'll give an illustration. I gave this when I was a chaplain.
This is important before we go too fast, because the desire, the arousal, seeing something in the society
mere arousal
that's stimulating is not lust.
It's not
the sin. Yeah.
No, you can't not desire if you're a human being. God made us to. And to fight that is crazy. What we have to do is to channel those desires in an appropriate way.
To define the simple arousal as something evil, it twists your understanding of God as the grand frustrator. Well, he put this in me. I didn't ask for it. And this is the impulse. So, you know, and so there's already an argument and a fight that's going the wrong way.
Right, right.
When you start at a place of thankfulness, mere fact that there is the capacity for arousal, that's a gift, that's a blessing, and if I can allow God to lead me into the right place, it'll be wonderful. If you start there, it's a much different road.
And the desire for sexual fulfillment is not wrong. There's a
way that God
redeems us and brings us
and
to a place of freedom. Yeah, and brings us to freedom in it.
Wayne asked me to share this story, and this is the one that I shared with the kids at school. Let's think about a little fellow, maybe 10 years old, who loves Butterfingers. For you folks in the UK, we do a Mars bar or something. But you're
you swipe at the UK people.
Got that, Simon.
Simon's on his train listening.
Simon,
anyway, he just loves Butterfingers, and he's 10 years old. He walks into a candy shop and walks over to the Butterfinger bar there, and his mouth is watering. He's hungry for it. He wants it so bad. And he looks up, and sure enough, the woman at the desk is turned over in the dustbin. She's actually down in the wastebasket trying to do with something. And so he takes the Butterfinger, puts it in his shirt, and walks out. Now, has he stolen the Butterfinger? Has he stolen it? Of course he has. You know, he did. He walked out with it. Well, and he's still, next day he wants it again. So he goes back into the shop. He doesn't have any money in his pocket. He didn't have any money the day before either. He's 10 years old. His mouth is watering. He's wanting it real bad. And he looks up at to try to catch a moment when the woman turns away at the desk, at the counter. She won't. She's got her eye on it because she missed a Butterfinger, right? Well, little boy walks out. He doesn't get the Butterfinger, but he wanted it just like he did the day before. He walks out. He's converted at a Southern Baptist Bible school or something that week. And so he comes back at the end, he's been converted, and he walks back in, and his mouth's watering. He's tasting it, that peanut butter and chocolate and all the crispiness. And it's, ooh, and he wants it so bad. He looks down, he reaches in his pocket, third time, he still doesn't have it. But he turns around, and he walks out. Now, two times in those three little adventures, he stole a Butterfinger.
Yep.
The first time, he got it in his pocket and got it in his mouth. The second time, he would have if he could have, and he was looking for it.
Right.
The third time, his mouth watered. He wanted it. He desired it. He could taste it, but he didn't take it. And he got out. Now, everybody can understand the first time when you steal it. when you just, you know, you get it.
Yep, that's wrong.
Second time, you want it and you would if you could and you try to and you wait an opportunity, but you don't. That's lusting after her.
That's what Jesus was talking about.
That's what Jesus was talking about. The third time, you're free of it. But the third time, even the third time, when he didn't, and he wouldn't have, he still desired it.
Wrong.
He still wanted it. He could still taste it in his mouth, but he didn't.
But he wasn't conspiring in the intent and the will of his heart.
That's a good way to say it. He did conspire in the intent.
That's good. Good stuff.
Because I think for a lot of folks, to be able to separate that gives me a place for God to inhabit that is still okay. If I have the arousal and that in and of itself is a natural part of who I am, then where it goes from there, I can invite God into that place. He can meet me at that table and lead me to a wonderful place as opposed to, oh, I'm done for.
I've already sinned just because I had the desire.
Right, I'm already abandoned, and what a wretch I am. It's like at that moment, the massive difference between being able to find a way of healing and a way of freedom versus just repeated failure is recognizing that, you know, God knows how he made us.
Right.
And, you know, I always laughed, you know, when I was a little kid, the big to-do about the last temptation of Christ and Martin Scorsese, you know, what a heretic he is. And you're just going like, I got to think that the basic premise of that movie was coming off the fact that the Bible itself says we have such a great high priest.
Who in every way is tempted as we are.
And it's like, I don't think most people have sat and thought that through. If that's true, he knows what's going on in my heart, and the awesome good news is not what a failure I am, but there is a way of freedom that he is very well aware of as a human.
Sure.
In his humanness, he knows how to lead me in a path that I can follow.
Because he's had to follow it himself.
Yeah.
Exactly.
He did it every single day.
Right, right.
Living in the same kind of body we got. And he was able to walk this life out.
John Calvin said that every time Jesus was tempted, he was on Calvary. Every time he was tempted, he was doing it for us. Every time he said yes to God, which was his no to sin, instead of sin, he was saving the human race.
Mm.
Isn't that good?
And what, very good.
You know, yeah, true. I don't think he was some kind of an innocent little Adam that didn't take the tree. I think he had to struggle.
Oh, yeah, he didn't have testosterone.
He took on my nature. He didn't take on the nature of some prehistoric Adam that was innocent. He took on the struggle that I have to struggle with, and he took my crooked nature and straightened it out.
Yeah.
And walk to heaven. That's why he had to spend, you know why he had to spend all those nights in prayer? So he wouldn't hate the Pharisees. Can you imagine how he could have hated them? But he had to die for them too.
I sense another podcast. Actually, we've just about got to the end of this one. Before we do, I want to share this one. It came up on our site today, and it's something Rick shared, and I think that he's talking about depression, but I think it applies to this struggle with sin exactly the same way. What you've described, Bob, a couple of times is the process of God transforming us. Here's what he wrote. He's talking about just struggling with depression. He had a conversation with God. He journaled something like this. God, he says, me, God, why won't you just heal all my hurts here and now? Or we could put that, all my temptations here and now. God, this is your heart we're talking about. Do you really want me to go in there and just flatten everything with a bulldozer and start over? And Rick says, I'm not sure. It doesn't sound fun, but maybe it would be worth it. And God's answer, my goal is restoration, like an artist who lovingly, slowly restores an old painting. It takes time, but have patience. I am doing that delicate work in you.
Beautiful.
I love that.
Who was that, Rick?
That was Rick.
Rick, thanks.
Thank you for traveling with us on the God Journey. You can be part of the conversation by visiting our website, thegodjourney.com,